I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. My guest today, Sandra Goodman, PhD, is co-founder and editor of Positive Health PH Online. Trained as a molecular biology scientist in agricultural biotechnology in Canada and the United States, she has focused on health issues since the 1980s in the UK and is author of 4 books, including Nutrition and Cancer, State of the Art, Vitamin C, The Master Nutrient, Geraniums, The Health and Life Enhancer, and numerous articles. Dr. Goodman was the lead author of the consensus document, Nutritional and Lifestyle Guidelines for People with Cancer, and compiled the Cancer and Nutrition Database for the Bristol Cancer Help Center in England in 1991. Dr. Goodman and her longtime partner, Mike Howell, seek individuals with the resources, structural organization, and interest to continue and expand the legacy of Positive Health PH Online forward into the 21st century, adding facilities to conduct online seminars, fundraising for alternative cancer research, as well as to promote leading holistic organizations and businesses internationally. Follow her on her blog and purchase Nutrition and Cancer State of the Art. Dr. Goodman may be contacted privately for research, lectures, and editorial services via sandra@positivehealth.com, www.positivehealth.com, sandra@drsgoodman.com, and www.drsgoodman.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Dr. Goodman, and I look forward to hearing about your model for integrated healthcare system, your work on Positive Health Online, and also the work that you have done with cancer patients. Now, first, you started in molecular biology, but you've ended up in healthcare. How did this come about?
Well, that's the $60,000 question, isn't it? I mean, like many other people, my life has been a series of meetings, accidental junctures, but mostly because of my very idealistic nature, mm-hmm. which I think has been honed a little bit. But I wanted to, I think when I was little, there was the Biafran crisis with children starving. And so I really wanted to help to feed children that were starving. And so I was a molecular biologist working in agriculture, and I did work on soybeans to try to improve nitrogen fixation. But I came to the conclusion after more than a decade of research that I didn't really want to spend my life making discoveries that would go to pay like a patent on a corporation. Mm-hmm. 'Cause I was working for a big corporation. And so I decided to leave that research. This was in the mid-80s when all, like on Monsanto and all mm-hmm. those mm-hmm. companies were starting to get into the agricultural biotechnology field. And I did a lot, quite a bit of traveling. And when I came to the UK, I met with a woman who gave me a box of research, which was about the mineral organic germanium. Mm-hmm. She was mm-hmm. a distributor. And she wanted me to look through the research and write it up. So on. And at the same time, in the mid-80s, was this whole HIV-AIDS crisis. And so I was reading a lot about HIV and New Scientist. And I read that organic germanium affected and altered T cells, and it was an immune modulator. And I also read at the same time that there were discoveries about HIV, the same sort of thing. So I got very excited, and I I was writing up, I wrote a book, and I wrote, which was published in Medical Hypothesis, and I started to organize doing clinical trials to test organic germanium, and I ended up writing a book, and I even went over to the States and worked for a year at Bastyr College. And all the time I was trying to raise funds for, to do these clinical trials, and I sent research to all the pharmaceutical companies to get a grant, which in fact probably was the reason that several years later I discovered that that organic germanium had been banned as a supplement, because I think it interfered with some of the pharmaceutical companies that were trying to patent and use retroviral, antiretroviral drugs. So that should teach me being a very good scientist. And that was so disappointing, because I've never been able to find out whether organic germanium might have been a viable, effective way to modulate and help with AIDS. Mm-hmm. And when I was in the States, that was in the late 80s, about 89, there was a research conference. Lots of people attended, doing everything from herbal medicine and nutritional medicine and energy medicine and minerals, and all about HIV. But after I'd returned to the UK, and I was working with my then new partner in publishing and typesetting, an investigative journalist walked into where I was working. And this is kind of answering your question. And he had written a book called Dirty Medicine. His name was Martin Walker. And it seems that just about everybody that had been involved in trying to explore alternative methods for HIV had dirty tricks played on them, and either been destroyed, their reputations had been destroyed, or whatever they were doing had been closed down, including people like the Bristol Cancer Help Center and many other. And his book, his first book, Dirty Medicine, in which I edited, so I learned a lot, which really made the hair on my neck stand up, because I saw what was happening to people. And germanium was one of those stories, actually. So it never really got tested, and it was a source of huge disappointment. But that's how I started looking into, that was my first book on organic germanium. And then when I still wanted to carry on doing research, and I got a position at Bastyr College, it was, to teach for a year. And while I was there, I was still trying to raise funds for this organic germanium. And I met by accident, well, maybe it's not an accident, the people that were doing, from the Linus Pauling Institute, that were studying ester C, which was a new, like using metabolite from vitamin C for HIV and other things. And they asked me to write a book. So that was my second book. That happened. And then I came back to the UK, and I was there was a huge scandal in the early 90s by all these quackbusters that were trying to really dish the dirt on anything that was complementary. And they did horrible articles about, they called germanium, organic germanium, pretty poison. Organic germanium got banned because I think some people in Korea were using an inorganic kind of germanium, like for diodes, no electronic one, not organic germanium, and so it was causing kidney failure. And because of that, they banned germanium, organic germanium. And there was also a huge scandal, which became like the main item on the news in 1990-1991, that the Bristol Cancer Help Center, which was a holistic cancer center, that women on the news, it said that women who attended the Bristol Cancer Help Center had a higher rate of cancer, of like death, mortality, than those that had standard care. And what they were doing at the, this didn't make any sense, because the Bristol Cancer Help Center was using spiritual meditation and organic food and those kinds of very gentle kinds of therapies for cancer. And it didn't make sense. And in fact, it turned out that the author of that, it was a flawed report that the women that were attending the Bristol Cancer Health Center were, had a sort of more advanced kind of cancer than normal women. And it's very sad, because the head author of the research paper that was flawed later on committed suicide. So it's just quite dramatic. Right. And, but with the Bristol Cancer Help Center having survived, it wasn't closed down, it almost closed down, they wanted to put themselves on a more scientific base and they assembled a group of so-called experts, you know, people that were in the holistic field, so nutrition and herbal medicine and so on, to discuss nutrition and lifestyle guidelines for people with cancer. And I was invited to this workshop that we had, and I ended up being the lead author to write up the findings, which were eventually published in a consensus document about life, nutrition and lifestyle guidelines. I am getting to the answer of your question soon. And when we were having lunch one day at the center, I mentioned to the then director, Pat Pilkington, who was one of the founders, who died recently the last few years herself, that my partner wanted to set up a sandwich bar. Because we were looking for what to do. It was difficult at the time. It was the real recession in the early 90s. And so Pat Pilkington must have felt, you know, what is this woman going to be doing in a sandwich bar? And she raised money to fund a project for me to do, which was to set up a database on cancer and nutrition. So I had a project who, there were thousands, probably 5,000 published research in Medline about nutrition and cancer, and I set up a database with the help of, you know, with people that were in epidemiology and so on. And then from that, I was asked to write articles, which then got serialized and it got put into a book. So my third book was about nutrition and cancer. And so this is taking us up to about 1993, and my partner suggested we could see that there was a huge amount of information, of published information about non-chemotherapy and radiotherapy approaches to cancer. They weren't being communicated to most people. And he suggested that we set up a magazine. And so we did. We set up. So that's kind of how I got started. We set up a newsletter, and then that led to Positive Health. So that's the answer to your first question.
Okay.
Sorry if that was a bit long-winded.
Right. Then, Sandra, from your own personal health and medical experiences, you found that traditional medicine was not always able to cure diseases. And from this, you decided that there are multiple modal approaches to optimum health. Can you tell us a little bit about this process?
Yes. I mean, I've had I've probably had a lot of experience with illness, but a few things that have really, really made me get it, that the conventional approach isn't always the best one, I had severe pelvic inflammatory disease after I finished my PhD, and it was really excruciating pain. And at the time, I was working for a corporation doing all this research in agriculture, and I had good health insurance. This was in the States in the early 80s, and I got, I don't know how much it must have cost, but they sent me over a couple of years. I had all these x-rays and imaging things, see, you know, what was going on, and even a laparoscopic operation to see, well, what was going on. And so at the end of all of this, they said, well, you've been having inflammation infections. Mm-hmm. And the only thing they could suggest was to just, you know, take antibiotics nonstop, which really wasn't a very good idea. And I was suffering. And in fact, the laparoscopic operation they did stirred it up so horribly. And I was getting involved. I'd also had, I mean, now you can see in hindsight, I'd also separated from my husband. So there was a lot of stress going on in my life, which probably contributed to this. And I was involved in some amateur dramatics. I was living in Syracuse at the time, and I was in a play. And after the play, one of the people that had been there phoned me up and said, oh, you know, how are you? Are you okay? And usually, you know, you just say, yes, I'm fine. But I was in such dire pain that I said no. And so this guy that I didn't know came over, and it turns out that he was a person in NLP, and which uses hypnosis. And he did some NLP stuff on me. And then he also referred some people that were into holistic medicine, like chiropractic, and also the East-West Center in Syracuse, which was macrobiotic. And I didn't know anything about that. Although, you know, earlier in my life, I had done a lot of work in, like, with yoga and so on. But I went along to the East-West Center, and I heard that there were some really very high, eminent people in macrobiotics that were there. And I took some cooking classes. And I thought, well, you know, what have I got to lose to just have, you know, brown rice and miso and vegetables and so on? You know, I didn't have any opinion against it or for it. So I just, you know, I went on a macrobiotic diet and I stopped having pain within a month. Mm. It was really, you know, incredible just by doing that. So that was one instance where, you know, I could see that you can really accomplish amazing things just by changing your diet and your mental attitude and so on. And another time was when this was later on in the 80s, when I was in the UK, and I was having mid-cycle bleeding, my menstrual cycle. And I went to the usual women's health center, and they just said, well, it's just a hormonal thing, and they suggested going on the pill, but I didn't want to take the pill. And then I was introduced to a homeopath who gave me a remedy, and I didn't know anything about homeopathy up until then, and I had no idea one way or another. And again, I said, well, you know, what am I got to lose, you know, these take these little, and she was a sort of conventional classical homeopath and didn't tell me what the remedy was or anything. And then the next day I woke up and I had really heavy torrential bleeding, and then the bleeding stopped, and that was the end of the, you know, that was that. So, like, you know, there have been lots of things in my life that have shown me, but when I started to research, when I did the consensus document, it talked about many, many aspects of, you know, diet and food and what sort of foods and what sorts of, I'm just trying to look at the supplements, things that you can do, if you have cancer. And so I had that was very referenced and all the things that are, you know, good to eat that you should avoid, things that you could eat moderately or things that you could eat, you know, like very good fats, and what you should avoid.
Then, Sandra, tell us about your model for integrated healthcare systems.
Well, I'm originally Canadian, and there is someone who wrote a book called Two Solitudes, a very famous book. And I sort of see that the way the healthcare system in the UK, and I suspect it's a bit like that in the US, but I'm not sure. It's all divided into, it's got these semantic euphemisms called conventional and alternative or complementary, which is all, to me, nonsense. You know, healthcare is healthcare. And how can you divide it? You know, how can you say that, for example, physiotherapy is conventional, but massage and osteopathy and chiropractor are, which use some of the same techniques, you know, that they're alternative or complementary. And so in the mid-80s, late 80s, when I came back to the UK, I envisaged this, like, that there are two, like a no-entry system between two spheres. One is the orthodox system, and the other is the complementary system, which has, you know, like nutrition and herbal medicine, osteopathy and acupuncture and homeopathy and healing and Ayurveda and so on, that all of those are lumped into complementary or alternative. And the orthodox is another circle, and they're just, the twain don't meet. You can't go between the two. And this really hits home when you start dealing with people, say, with cancer or with heart disease, where you have a conventional system that is based on pharmaceutical drugs, based mainly, and surgery, and a lot of other systems which can accomplish the same, you know, many even better things without the side effects and without the consequences. And so, you know, this is what I call an integrated. I didn't really make, I'm not the only person that's made this up. I've got these diagrams, but it seems to me ludicrous that you can have you know, thousands of years of clinical work where you have people that have used herbal medicine and Ayurveda and nutritional medicine, and you just throw that out the door, in the window, and what you have are drugs that have side effects, and then the side effects, you need other drugs. And so, you know, I think it's stupid. And I don't understand why everybody doesn't see that, but I suspect that most people aren't aware.
Right, right. Then, Sandra, can you tell us about your objectives and goals and more about the Positive Health PH Online? It's a major accomplishment, and so I'd like the listeners to know about this.
Well, when we started Positive Health in mid-90s, 1994, it started as a research. We had been doing, publishing research studies, and then we morphed it into, we enlarged it into a magazine, and it was published, a print magazine, every month. Well, it started out bi-monthly, and then it went on to being monthly. And the idea was to include an entire spectrum from, you know, mind, body, spirit. So you had spiritual, mind matters, thinking, depression, emotional things, to body work, all the kinds of body work and massage and osteopathy and physiotherapy. And then things like nutrition and herbal medicine, Ayurveda. In other words, all the different modalities. Now, they all weren't included in every single article, but we had certain principles when we started this, so that we didn't want the magazine to be focused on celebrities or cult things. And it wasn't about a single technique or single discipline. And in fact, I really wanted to mix it up and have even contradictory approaches. So like if we were talking about allergies, you often have different people that have different opinions and different tests and diagnoses, and how you can sort out how you can test for allergies and how you can treat them. And for cancer, for example, because I've always had a very large focus on cancer, in Positive Health, there are probably hundreds of articles on cancer and many different approaches to cancer, because people need to realize there isn't one magic bullet about anything, and that nobody necessarily has all the answers either. And cancer cures and approaches to treatment for cancer has been going on for, you know, since before the 20th century. Many very esteemed and erudite people went before us. You know, people like, you know, the Essiac, Hoxie, Royal Rife, and lots of different kinds of herbal approaches to cancer using herbal medicine, Gerson, macrobiotics, Laetil, homeopathy. You know, there are many different kinds of photodynamically, many approaches to cancer. I wanted people to absorb by osmosis that, because the thing is that when you get ill, when you get slammed with a cancer diagnosis, this is a time of huge stress, and you're face to face with an oncologist who's going to say, well, you've got, you know, stage so and so of this kind of cancer, and we're going to schedule you for surgery, and then you're going to have chemotherapy and radiotherapy. It's not really a time to start thinking about, well, what are you going to do? Because I think that if you think about how you would assemble your team, your holistic team, before you get to that stage, that is very helpful. So that is kind of how we started with the magazine.
Mm-hmm. Is it research-based or articles, or what is the focus?
Well, every issue of the magazine, and we printed, we had a print copy, and we had an online copy since 1995, so since about the beginning, has had a format with articles and research and letters to the editor and book reviews, so that, and also new things in the news, like we call them short features or brief takes. And so it's quite balanced and very far-reaching. And now, since we are entirely online and the entire archive is now online, we've got over 3,500 articles published in about 150 different subjects. Mm-hmm. And we've got about the same number of research updates. These are sourced from Medline. We have fairly complicated algorithms that sort out alternative methods, nutrition, and every kind of illness.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, we started out in the first few years, and in the UK, it's not like Canada, I don't think, where everybody's trying to cheer you on and wish you good, wish mm-hmm. you well. But in the UK, it seems like when you start something, a lot of people waiting to see if you're going to go bust, you know, if it's going to fail.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But after you've been going for maybe 5 years, they sort of think, oh, well, you're going to be around. But people, I think, recognize the quality, because the kind of authors that were writing the articles were very top drawer. They were the top of the of their profession. And we simply put ads in the paper, you know, if people wanted to publish a case study or an article, or if they had books to review. And it takes a while, but you eventually get all of the publishers start sending you mountains of books, and people start emailing you. And, you know, to this day, I'm drowning from filing cabinets mm-hmm. and hard drives, and because people, yeah, there's never any trouble in getting material.
Mm-hmm. Do the public pay to review this, or is this free?
No, this is free. The website has always been free access.
Mm-hmm.
The magazine used to be, you know, used to buy, purchase the magazine, and it used mm-hmm. to be available mm-hmm. in the UK and in health stores and newsagents and even in the UK. But we have experimented, because we've been online for almost 25 years, mm-hmm. gone down a lot of experimental routes trying to make people pay and not pay. But we continue to make it free access, because I think people, you know, if people can't find something on your site and they have to pay, then just go elsewhere. And so we've, you know, we really want people to have, you know, have access to this. It's quite, you know, and I've also continued to be involved with people who approach me about their own diagnoses and come to me for information. And, you know, it always amazes me that people don't seem to know, you know, because this is not new material. The things about nutrition, for example, fat, you know, and heart disease, how mm-hmm. they were, you know, the medical establishment was saying, oh, you know, saturated fats are the devil, mm-hmm. evil. And now, of course, that's the paradigm has changed, and mm-hmm. now it's sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, a book was written about the dangers of sugar poison, you know, way back in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not, you know, things go around and come around.
Right,
but I
right.
think that a lot of people, you know, people come up and they don't necessarily know all the things that the old timers know. So
right.
it's a good idea to keep, you know, it's never old hat, in my opinion.
Right. You're right. It comes around. If you just wait long enough, everything seems to come around. The fashions, you know, if you wait long enough, the fashions are back to where they were 30, 40 years ago, you know, because everything
right.
just seems to go in cycles.
It's very, you know, when I've been watching different, you know, now that the internet is really in full flow and everybody has a voice of mm-hmm. what they're going to say, there's just so much available about, say, cancer. And yet the media never mentions anything other than, you know, they're craven to the chemotherapy and radiation. Anytime someone has cancer, the public now expect that they're going to have bald heads and be shaven because of chemotherapy.
Mm-hmm.
And,
mm-hmm.
so on. And anything that mentions a non-standard approach is basically, you know, really criticized and mocked. And it's very sad when you encounter people and, you know, as time has gone on, I've deepened my own knowledge. And I mean, there's been a huge amount of research about the effects of chemotherapy, and also about what happens with cancer. And in fact, that's another paradigm that I think the establishment is going down, the genetic, you know, that it's DNA, that the genes are mutated and that causes cancer. Whereas there is another paradigm that got started early in the 20th century, talking about the metabolic paradigm mm-hmm. about cancer, and how, and this ties into that cancer cells can only use, they feed on sugar and glucose, and they have anaerobic digestion, whereas a healthy cell uses oxygen, but cancer cells don't have that
mm-hmm.
facility. And scientists that were doing work, like Warburg and people that theorized this in the 30s, this kind of fell out of fashion, you know, once antibiotics came on board and the pharmaceutical companies came on board. So unfortunately, I think the paradigm for cancer is a bit like it is with infection. You know, with infection, you need to kill the bugs. You need to take antibiotics or they're all dead. Mm-hmm. But in fact, you know, what happens, of course, is some of the bacteria get resistant. It might only be 0.001%, but then those become resistant and they come back stronger. And this happens with chemotherapy as well. You're giving the body poison. And you're wiping out cancer cells initially, but then some of them become resistant.
Mm-hmm.
And then after a period of remission, it comes back. And in fact, it's been shown recently that chemotherapy creates cancer stem cells.
Mm-hmm.
And there's quite a few books for my bedtime reading, you know, I've been reading books that talk. So I haven't made this up, really. This is mm-hmm. all things that are written about. You know, there's a book called Chemotherapy Heals Cancer and the World is Lap. It's about an 800-page book. And it doesn't just talk about, it has like a really global approach of not just nutrition and diet and so on, but also things you can do with your mind and stress, spiritual things, and how you can reevaluate your life. And, you know, but you have to, some people don't really want that. I mean, mm-hmm. I've had people come to me and it's their son or their brother or whatever has got cancer, and they just go down the conventional route. They don't, because often they have a medical background.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting, Sandra, that you mentioned that medicine considers that they have to kill the cancer cells, and yet how they kill it is with chemo, surgery, radiation. They don't consider any other way of killing it. And they don't know whether that's effective or not. And also a lot of it, as you said, kills the other cells in the body. And what I think is more exciting is things that are coming along, like which you've mentioned on your site, the chemosensitivity testing, which Dr. Forsyth has been using for at least 5 years that I know of, where they test to determine if person wants chemo, which type of chemo is going to be most effective? Is Laetrile going to be effective? Is mistletoe going to be effective?
That's right.
What is going to be effective before they start the patient's treatment? Now, medicine has done that in the past, as far as I went to the doctor recently and I was bleeding and it turned out that my bladder had gotten an infection and it was bleeding. And they sent the specimen off for a culture. But does medicine do that for cancer? No. They treat everyone
and
the same.
And in fact, there are draconian laws. In the UK, there's the 1939 mm-hmm. Cancer Act that actually make it illegal mm-hmm. to treat cancer with anything other than surgery, chemotherapy, or radiation. They really have it all covered. And in fact, in the early part of the 20th century, apparently, the pharmaceutical companies, which the forerunner of those were like the Rockefeller Foundation,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
apparently mandated for university medical schools that they had to follow a pharmaceutical model or they didn't get their license to train doctors. And so this is why, and I hate to really go down this kind of conspiracy theory, but you can see how it's got everybody in a straitjacket
mm-hmm,
because
mm-hmm.
Alternative and holistic practitioners are in fear of being, you know, even holistic doctors are being struck off. And you know about some
mm-hmm.
of the
mm-hmm.
doctors that are being prosecuted and persecuted all the time. And this has also come about with the vaccination issue whereby some of the vaccines have got materials in them which are harmful, environment dangerous, like aluminium and mercury. And
mm-hmm.
so there is a fund that's been set up, a fund to remunerate people that are vaccine injured. But the pharmaceutical companies, that, in fact, the CDC, the Center for Disease Control, that makes the they actually hold the patents on this, and the companies don't have any liability for any harm that is done. So you can't sue them, even if your child or you were harmed by the vaccine. And this is very shocking, really.
Well, Ed Griffin, in his book, very well documents you know, the Rockefellers and all of the people that were involved in getting the drugs into the medical schools. It had to do with giving grant because the curriculums were in poor shape and the facilities were in poor shape and they didn't have decent lab. And in order to, they did a major study, I think it was called the Flexner study. I remember studying that as a student when I was a nursing student back in the 50s. And so that's how they got into all of medical schools and directed the curriculum toward drug. And so that has lasted all of these years. And as you say, anyone that tries to go against this, there's a quack law, and they're considered quack, and there's a quack list in this country that lists all these people. It's like a who's who in alternative medicine, the people that are on the quack list. And I mentioned to you yesterday when we talked, Dr. Forsyth, who wrote a chapter in my book, he's having probably the highest success rate with stage 4 cancer patients, 5-year survival. He's having 70% success rate, and that was with 1,000 patients that he followed. And yet he was targeted the same as Dr. Brzezinski was targeted. So it seems like Hoxie was targeted years ago, as you mentioned, nurse in Canada, Cassie. It seems like they pick the most successful because they're the most threat. And when I saw that Dr. Forsyth had been in trouble with the FDA, I thought, well, I wonder what great things he's doing that brought them to their attention and why they're focusing on him. And then when I saw what kind of success rate he was having, I thought, well, this puts it all in perspective. So
it's so shocking. If you are brought up with it, you know, with the ideals that you know, everyone is searching for truth and knowledge. When you find something that the community will, you know, will back it up, and people and doctors are there to make you better. And it's a really cynical thing. What, you know, when you finally realize that it's just being driven by money, and people don't realize that, you know, it's like if you bring up your children about good and evil and that the, you know, the righteous will have justice and so on. And you look at some of the things that are going on in the world today, where you see bombing and killing and murdering and hacking to death of people and women, the most heinous crimes you could ever imagine. And they don't seem to get any, you know, punishment. And I just think, I don't know how, if I had young children today, how I would answer a question if they said, well, why are they doing these bad things, you know? I don't know. It's very depressing.
Well, coming from a public health prevention background, I wonder why there has not been more done in the area of prevention also. And it seems like it's been after the naturopathic doctors and the alternative division of the cancer, you know, at the government level and all came about, that there's been more emphasis, but it's more on exercise, on nutrition, on supplements, etc. And what I'm very excited about, which I mentioned to you yesterday also, is that they are coming up with diagnostic tests that will tell you your probability of getting cancer up to 10 years before you have cancer. It's based on the cancer cell developing into a tumor over a 10 to 12 year period, and that there are certain things that happen. And so there's a test like the cancer profile test that looks at 8 different tests, and it is up to 97% effective, accurate in terms of predicting that you will have cancer down the line.
But I hope that I think from what I've seen with people that have used different programs, different therapeutic programs that have been successful, different nutritional programs or other supplements, and some of these people you were talking about, that if people actually really work on their health before they get cancer, you know, that they keep, they're very disciplined, they have a good diet, they have a good environment, they do exercise, they're not overweight, that this will prevent cancer. This is not a predetermined, you know, I don't think it's predetermined. You can change the environment
right.
of the body so that you can make it more likely for the cancer cells to die.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think it's wonderful if you have more powerful diagnostic tests, but at the same time, I think if you say to people, oh, well, we've got this test and it's going to prove that you're going to have, you know, this kind of cancer in 10 years. Well, of course, a lot of things can change. So it doesn't mean you should just carry on, you know, filling your face, you know, with Kentucky Fried Chicken or whatever else, you know, maybe you should mention that, but, you know, fried chicken and things that are not with healthy food.
Well, see, I don't see the test doing that. I see the test as being a warning to people that they need to change their diet, they need to work on exercise, they need to do the things that are preventive in order to either reduce the effect of the cancer if it does happen, or to avoid that possibility. And I see the mind as being a very important part of this.
Oh, absolutely. I hope you're right. I mean, mm-hmm. you know, if you wanted to be a bit cynical, you could say, well, it depends who is marketing these tests. You know, is it going to be a gold mine for the drug companies, insurance companies, and will it impact, you know, all the sociological impact of, you know, will it stop you getting mortgages if they have a result of your test? But anyway, we're getting into Big Brother.
And if you've got a statistic, which was 1 in 3 women and 1 in 2 men, and now I think it's 1 in 2 every people in the United States will have cancer in their lifetime. I mean, it's got to get better. And we've mentioned nutrition. That's the other thing that I was not aware of before, but there are nutritional deficiency tests that you
that's
can
right.
do. They're a little expensive. Up to like $1,800, but it will identify your nutritional deficiencies. And that also gives you something to work with to, you know, help you correct the problems that, because they will be health issues, you know, down the road if you don't correct these nutritional
Absolutely.
Deficiencies.
That's right.
So I'm excited about, you know, what's happening, and also in the mental area, you know, a lot of things that used to be considered, you know, kind of strange out there, like creating your future or creating your life. You know, that used to be pretty strange out there, but it's not anymore. And people are seeing you do that.
And we're going back a little bit to nutrition and diet. I mean, there's been this huge epidemic of propensity of obesity, and which is correlated, I guess, with diabetes and other morbidities. Mm-hmm. And several years ago, about, I don't know, 4 or 5 years ago, I went to the doctor for some pain in my knee or something. And he tricked me into getting weighed. And I didn't realize, I wasn't weighing myself, and I didn't realize how heavy I was. And when I found out what my weight was, I was really shocked.
Mm-hmm.
And so, because I guess the weight had come on over, I mean, I wasn't enormously morbidly obese, but I was too fat. And so I just decided that I would, because I used to be an athletic person. I did gymnastics and so on. So I was, you know, very, very disciplined kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided, I looked at what I was eating. I cut out all the muffins and cake and that sort of thing and sugar, and just looked at what I was eating. Instead of having like a glass of orange juice or a juice in the morning, I just have like a little bit and just have one piece of toast at lunchtime, you know, cut out a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
Basically eat the same diet, but not have all the stuff that's, you know, the bad stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And it took about a year and a half. I lost 50 pounds.
Wow.
And I didn't do anything really, you know, other than what I'm saying. I just adjusted what I ate. And I just weighed I bought scales and I weighed myself every, you know, week or whatever. And it came off slowly, you know, a few pounds a week. And yeah, so that was about 3-4 years ago. So you don't have to
Right.
to go on a special diet. It's like this for everything. You don't have to follow a particular route
Right.
to cure cancer.
Mm-hmm.
There are many different ways to arrive at the same destination,
mm-hmm.
but you need to have a lot of common sense and what, you know, sort of you need to have clean food, clean water, you know, a clean environment. You need to be happy, or at least try to. you know, get rid of your stress and love yourself kind of thing. And these things have a lot to do with good health. So I think, you know, what I've wanted to do with positive health is I wanted to, and I still want to let people, to help people to get an understanding that there isn't necessarily one way, that not all doctors or not all experts know the right thing. You know, and that's really an important realization, really.
Right.
So that when you're struck with something, you know, if you have, you know, a kidney problem or a heart problem, you don't think, oh, now what pill do I take now? You know, what are the options?
Right.
Now, it's not always easy.
Right. Now, Sandra, we're getting it toward the end of the time. So can you tell us about services, products, and your book and your website and how the listeners can reach you?
Well, the Positive Health is at www.positivehealth.com. And if you go into the articles tab, there's tabs for articles and book reviews and research. You can see it there, or you could look at the back issues. And there's a search box. So that's a window into a huge array and archive of material. And my, my own personal website is www.drsgoodman.com, drsgoodman.com. And my germanium, organic germanium and vitamin C book are there online. Available, and my nutrition and cancer state of the art book is available, purchased by via PayPal or a credit card on the site as well.
And do you have services or products?
No, I mean, if people, I'm a bit of a mug, I guess. If people get in touch with me, if they email me to sandra@positivehealth.com or they phone me, the phone number is on the website, then and ask about their particular problem, then I will do my best to give them the information, you know, to help them, because I think they need to be hooked up with a proper physician or, you know, I have a compilation email that has many different services and products for cancer, for example. If they email me, I'm happy to, you know, to send them that. They will reach out and, you know, get some information, read, talk to people. I'm not treating people. I'm conduit for information.
Right. Great. Well, I appreciate this very much, Sandra. It's been very interesting, and I know it will be helpful, and I know the listeners will want to get to your website and look at it, because I was very impressed with how comprehensive it is, and they will also be impressed and will be back to look up things that they want to look up and knowing.
And your book has been reviewed, and you've also written an article as well.
And that's how I located Sandra, everyone, was from a Google search of me. And so I was delighted for this, you know, opportunity. So again, I thank you very, very much, Sandra.
It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Because we have some time left today, I would like to talk with you about my new Cancer Foundation and an opportunity that I think will be of interest to you. My new Cancer Foundation can be found at www.holisticcancerfoundation.com. On the site, you will see first a video of the foundation. You will also see the goals, which are education, research, and patient care. I have an impressive board and advisory board for this foundation, and you can look at these on the site. I have worked for over a year getting content on the site, including interviews with cancer patients and doctors, cancer research, cancer treatment, and what is different on my site is research on mental, spiritual interventions and interviews with experts for interviews like affirmations, visualization, prayer, meditation, gratitude, forgiveness, and many others. These are included because I believe that disease results from multiple factors, and consequently, a holistic approach is necessary for recovering from cancer. To me, prayer, faith, optimism, and others are as important in treatment as medication, supplements, diet, and other interventions. I have experienced to support this belief. Having used a holistic approach since 1970, when I volunteered as a camp nurse for the Edgar Cayce organization, it was natural to use this approach when I was diagnosed with lung cancer in 1974. Curing this disease with all natural, holistic interventions, I continued using the approach in my personal life and with clients, and am now considered a pioneer in holistic health. I have worked for the past 5 to 6 months on the website section on prevention of cancer. This finished in a download gift of this material, around 50 pages, available for those who donate $12 or more to the foundation and receive a tax deduction receipt plus this gift. The booklet available as a download, titled Reduce Your Cancer Risk, A Holistic Approach. It will include the following. First, as a longtime educator, I like to start my writing with a theoretical framework in which to place the content. So there is first a theoretical framework based upon public health concepts. This framework will basically look at, first, ways to reduce the risk of known environmental carcinogens, and second, ways to strengthen the host against environmental and other carcinogens. Content on reducing the effect of known environmental carcinogens include electromagnetic waves, toxic chemicals such as BPA, formaldehyde, toxic metals such as aluminum and mercury, and last, ultraviolet waves. For all areas, there will be research related to the carcinogen, what you can do to reduce the risk, and an interview with an expert for many of these. The second part looks at ways to strengthen the host or you against carcinogens. It includes areas such as physical activities, nutrition including genetically modified organisms, organic food, etc., fluids, water and milk, supplements, vitamins, minerals, immune builders, sleep, smoking cessation, music, and then it moves into mental, spiritual interventions that includes affirmations, compassion, faith, forgiveness, gratitude, meditation, optimism, prayer, relaxation exercises, serving or helping others, social support, stress reduction, and visualization. Again, for each of these, there is research, what to do to strengthen yourself against cancer, and interviews with experts for many of these. You will hear interviews with 30 cancer or related experts on mental, spiritual interventions, such as forgiveness, gratitude, faith, and compassion. You'll hear about omega-3s, genetically modified organisms, genetically modified food, plant-based and other nutritional diets, smoking cessation, chemical and mental carcinogens, immune builders, music, and much, much more. So I hope this will be helpful to you and will help in preventing cancer in the future. I thank you for joining me today on the Holistic Health Show, and I hope some of the information will be useful to you. I invite you to my websites, holistichealthshow.com, where you will find all shows for the past 7 years under the blog. You will also find much of the research on natural ways to deal with cancer and other health conditions, and can sign up for my free monthly newsletter. On my website, beatlungcancer.net, you will find many of the 135 interviews from radio and television over the past 2 years about my book on treating lung cancer naturally and holistically when I was diagnosed 41 years ago next month and given 6 months to live by traditional medicine who offered chemo and surgery. This book was published in November 2012 and was a bestseller on Amazon. You will find endorsements of the book, a place to buy the book, and an earlier one from 2007 titled Healthy Holistic Aging, A Blueprint for Success. On my third website, you will find information on the Carl O'Helvey Holistic Cancer Foundation, begun last year and currently in the phase of completing the website. This site is at www.holisticcancerfoundation.com. Information on how the foundation differs from others, board members, research on holistic natural ways to deal with cancer, including mental and spiritual interventions, interviews with cancer physicians and survivors, and more. If you would like to donate to the work I am supporting, there is a tab to donate, and I can offer you a tax exemption receipt if living in the United States. I also invite you to join me on Facebook at my Facebook page, www.facebook.com/Carl Helvey, on my Holistic Health Show page at www.facebook.com/pages/Holistic Health Show, and the Carl O'Helvey Holistic Cancer Foundation page at www.facebook.com/beatlungcancernaturalalternative. On LinkedIn, I invite you to join me under my name, Dr. Carl O'Helvey. On Twitter, I invite you to join me at www.twitter.com/HolistHealthShow, HolistHealthShow. I wish you a great week, and I look forward to having you here in 2 weeks. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host.